Hi, great to see you. Thanks for coming. I am a teacher. The new teaching ads were those who can teach, and that was a rip-off of the old ones, which is those who can't teach, which frankly are the slightly more accurate ones. So when Tim says a little bit about everything, I know a tiny bit about everything, and not very much about anything. I'm a bit of a generalist in that sense. So tonight, 10 minutes talking about Jesus. That's what you're here for. Doors at the back, if you want to go. But I am a teacher. It's okay. I'm used to you looking like you're listening. I'm used to people looking like they're listening and not listening. And I'm also used to people just talking when I'm talking. So whatever you like, carry on. You are a bit bigger than the people I normally teach. I'm teaching 7 and 8 year olds at the moment. So you've got a challenge to live up to that kind of expectation. Yesterday, we're thinking about Jesus is like us, but not in the beard and sandals kind of way. I know I do have a beard, and on Tuesday I was wearing flip-flops, but that is just coincidence. Yesterday we thought about God is a father for us, if you weren't here, as in he's a father, he's for us, like any dad is. He wants the best for his kids. I want the best for my kids. If you're a dad, you want the best for your kids, and God is a father for us. He wants the best for his kids. Five ways tonight. Hopefully, 10 minutes, about 2 minutes each way. It's never going to happen, but we'll see how we go. 5 ways in which Jesus is like us. First way. Stupid question, do you like a good time? Duh. Yeah, yay! Yeah, that's why I've been Costa Coffee listening to somebody talk about Jesus. Woo. Everyone likes a good time, right? When you look back, you don't look back on the bad times and go, oh, do you remember those terrible times we had? Yeah, weren't they awful? We look back on the good times. Everyone likes a good time. Everyone likes a bit of a party. I used to like a party, but I'm 34 and I have 3 children, and a party now is an early night, which is before 9 o'clock. You can imagine the rest. Jesus likes a party. Jesus likes a good time, just like we do. One of the stories about Jesus in the second chapter of John's Gospel, he's at a wedding party and the party's over. They run out of wine. So Jesus goes, you've run out of wine. Yes, we've run out of wine. Well, there's some water here. Now it's wine. Yay, party continues. In fairness to Jesus, that's not his primary purpose. His mum kind of gives him a nudge for that one. It's kind of embarrassing. Mother, go on, son, show him what you can do. But he does, he turns the water into wine, and the party is actually extended beyond the party's end, which is kind of, you know, that's the dream, that's the future of what it is being a Christian. And that's why, you know, we dare to kind of go, yeah, I'm a Christian, I follow Jesus, because the end party is going to be awesome. Second thing, so do you like a good time? Jesus likes a good time. Jesus is like us. The second way he's like us, this isn't like a catch-all for everyone, but perhaps you're not keen on religion. Perhaps you are. Perhaps you're not keen on religion. I get the feeling the guys I work with, they're just not keen on religion. Well, it's a kind of understatement to say that Jesus wasn't keen on religion either, for kind of 2 reasons, really. One you can see, and you can look these up in your own time, get a Bible and read them. In the second chapter of John's Gospel, Jesus goes into the temple and kind of wrecks it. And the reason he does that is because the guys in the temple have turned a relationship with God into a ritual. They'd stopped caring about actually knowing God, and instead they turned it into doing stuff for God, but actually not really engaging with God at all. That's the first reason Jesus isn't keen on religion. The second reason in John 8, maybe you can identify with this, is the religious people, maybe you think it's about Christians, maybe it's true, are the most judgmental people. They're the most morally superior people. I don't... Smoking? No. Drinking? Terribly not. No, I have morals, you know. Don't do anything bad. Drive at speed limit. Very good person. Thank you very much. And there's a story in John 8, which is brilliant, where all the religious leaders, they go and catch a woman in adultery. Now, I don't know how, because they didn't have CCTV. Maybe they were peeping at the window. And I don't know what point they went, no, it's not adultery yet. Now it's adultery. I'll leave that with you. I don't know. Maybe if you've got any thoughts, you can let me know. But they catch a woman in adultery and they bring her to Jesus and say, look, she's committed adultery. Let's kill her. That's what the law says. And Jesus says, okay, well, we can kill her, okay, if none of you have done anything wrong. And what Jesus was doing, why Jesus wasn't keen on this idea of religion, is because these guys were comparing human standards and saying, this human standard is better than this one. We would never commit adultery, just like we'd never smoke or drink. Whereas Jesus is there about God's standard, and he's saying God's standard is here, good humans are here, and not so good humans are here, but God's standard is still way above. So Jesus wasn't keen on religion in that sense, in that it could make people judgmental. It could make people think, "Yeah, I'm great, I can do it," or it could leave people feeling helpless too. I can't do it. Third thing: do you like a good time? Jesus likes a good time. Maybe you're not keen on religion. Neither was Jesus. Third thing: have you ever? Another stupid question. You can tell I teach 7-year-olds, right? These aren't stupid questions for 7-year-olds. But 7-year-olds are all down with these questions. Have you ever been sad? Hello? Yeah, okay. And maybe sad like your team lost or whatever. But, you know, sad, have you ever been sad, that kind of grief and loss? The kind of hollow, empty sad that you feel inside? Well, so is Jesus. So is God's Son, Jesus. In John's Gospel in chapter 11, one of his best buddies, Lazarus, dies. And Jesus is really sad. I forget which fat northern comedian it is, Chris Moyles or Peter Kay. I heard a while ago on the radio use a kind of sweary phrase that I've not heard in ages, where something happened and Jesus wept. Well, that's from this story. It's actually in the Bible. He was kind of quoting the Bible. He was really sad, but he was more than sad at death. He was angry at it. It really bothered him how wrong it was. He turned up at the funeral, and people were mourning, and he was bothered. Deep down, he was bothered. Have you ever been sad, lost, or grief? Well, so is Jesus. He knows exactly what that is like. Fourth thing, and this is where so I know the answer is yes. I'm guessing. It is for me, but this is where you might just look straight ahead, because it's not the kind of thing that we talk about, really. Maybe girls do. Boys don't. So, you know, just pretend like nobody's looking at you, and you can just deny it all you want. Have you ever felt any of these things? Have you ever felt lonely? Have you ever felt isolated? Have you ever felt misunderstood or rejected? Okay. Say something else. So have I. And so is Jesus. Three areas that Jesus rejected. See if you can top this. He was rejected by his community. Grew up as a carpenter, right? Making stuff out of wood. And when he jacked that in and started to do his ministry, say, "Hi, I'm Jesus, I'm going to rescue the whole world, if you're interested." And the kind of the guys around him did a bit of a Monty Python on him. Said, "You're not the Messiah." But then they said, "You're Joseph's kid." They didn't say, "You're a naughty boy." They said, "You're not the Messiah, you're Joseph's kid. We know you with the stuff that you built out of wood and that. Not really interesting what you've got to say." If you think that's bad, the local church, or the synagogue as it was then, he went there to preach and stand up and say stuff. And the guys liked it so much, they took him out onto a cliff and tried to throw him off it. Yay, what a warm welcome. He was rejected by his community. He was rejected by his friends. At the time when he needed them the most, in the Garden of Gethsemane, where he went to pray and hang out before he had to go and be nailed to a cross, his friends were there, trouble turned up, and his friends went, and they were off, and they legged it, and they did one. And he was rejected by his family. There's a nice little bit, well, I say nice, it wasn't nice to Jesus, it's a bit, I find it quite funny, a bit in John chapter 7, where there's a big Jewish festival going on, and his brothers, all the family are off up to Jerusalem for this big Jewish festival, and they say, come on Jesus, come on Messiah boy, show us what you got, are you going to come up and show us all your big guns? They're kind of taking the mickey out of him. Yeah, big Messiah Jesus, you're going to save the world, come on then. And that's his family. So have you felt those things? No, of course, no. Have you felt lonely, rejected, misunderstood, maybe by people really close to you, maybe at times? So is Jesus. He knows exactly what that's like. Last thing, and if you think that one's bad, what about this one? Have you ever felt desperate? Have you ever felt desperate? Have you ever got to the end? Have you ever stared into the void where it's all too much? You can't do it anymore. You want to jack it in. You've had enough. It's uncomfortable, isn't it? It's uncomfortable because we don't remember those times. We remember the good times. We don't remember the times when we're desperate. Well, have you ever felt like that? So has Jesus. In the Garden of Gethsemane, again, before he went to the cross, he was sweating blood, the Bible says. I don't know how that figures, but I don't know if I've been that desperate to sweat blood, but he was sweating blood. He didn't want to go. Can you blame him? He was probably thinking about nails going through his body into a bit of wood. You know, he didn't want to do it. He was desperate. He was at the very end. He did do it, but he didn't want to do it. What do? When we feel desperate, we do something. We turn to something, don't we? Smoking, drinking. This is just my order of preference. Self-help. Whatever it is. Have you ever felt, when you feel desperate? No, Jesus has felt that. He knows exactly what it's like. And that's Jesus. That's five ways. There could have been a million, I guess. That's five ways that Jesus is like us. He's our God and he's our King. He's who we love to follow and love to serve. Because he understands us. Because he gets us. Because he's like us. There you go.
John, thank you very much indeed. Chance in just a moment to ask John questions, and a couple of other people are going to join him on a panel. I'd like to introduce you to the panel, and John's going to come out first. John, we already know. Could I also introduce you to Abimbola? Abimbola, come on out, please, would you? This is Abimbola. Abimbola loves watching television. She loves music. She's an Adele fan. She's a pharmacist. And I'm pretty sure we'll all realise very soon as well, she loves laughing. So that's Abimbola. Paul Harvey. Paul, come and join us here. This is Paul. Paul is married to Penny. He's survived four grown-up children, basically. You've seen them all grow up and are all different parts of the country, getting on well in life. He's a local doctor, been a local doctor here at Devonshire Green for many, many, many years. He's a classic car collector, and he's an adventurer. So that's our panel this evening. So thank you very much indeed, the three of you, for being willing to come to the front. They've not seen the questions. I've only just seen them myself, and then try to put them in some sort of order so that where there are similar questions, they are kind of near to each other, so we can have a consistency of thought progress. First question, I think this is a joke question. If Jesus was like me, was he ginger?
I think he was silver.
He was silver. Okay, that's that answered. This is another question. It might be a little bit more serious, this one. But I suppose that the question, can animals sin? The specific animal in mind is a turtle. Abimbola.
I don't know if animals can sin. I don't know what the relevance of that is to anyone here.
And that'll do. If you ask that question, take it up with Abimbola later on. Okay, that got us going, didn't it? I think Christianity has been decreased in terms of population after Industrial Revolution. Is this something that was predicted in the Bible? So the decrease in the popularity, I suppose, of Christianity following on from the Industrial Revolution. I suppose one wants to question whether that is true, the statement or not, before the question. I'm going to come to you, John, first on that. You've got your own microphone, or have you taken that off? All right, I'll use this one.
I have on. Well, in the last book of the Bible, which is Industrial Revelations, no, so I honestly, I've got no idea. Industrial Revolution, I think, here's what I know, my two cents is that the idea of Christianity that's through the Bible is if you follow somebody that people wanted to kill, you'll never be that popular. I don't know if it's supposed to be popular. But I get why it's not. That's all I got.
I think along similar lines. When the first Christians became Christians, when Christianity started, it wasn't a very big thing. And I don't think that's the idea, is that it's massive and that we're all part of this massive group. I think it's about individuals following Jesus, and that's what it's about. So it doesn't really matter if it's popular or not to us as a whole, if that makes sense. It's good when lots of people turn to Christ, definitely.
Yes, I think if people are just talking about organised religion that is kind of almost a cultural thing, then I think that has been fading away, and maybe there's a good reason for that. I think Jesus wasn't about being organised or fitting in with trends. He turned everything upside down, and if ordinary organized church is fading, that people are being excited about Jesus and having their lives changed by him, that's very different. I spent a few weeks last summer on the China-Tibet border and a couple of weeks last month in Nepal, and there organised church has been suppressed by the state, but thousands or literally millions of people are coming to faith in a really exciting way. One church we visited in Kathmandu over not all that many years had planted 62 more churches. And so that's how Jesus can turn things around.
Thank you all very much indeed. John, this is, I suppose, a particular question to you. It comes in response, I suppose, to your talk. In what way was Jesus rejected by his family, and where do we find that in the Bible? So I suppose just a simple question for you, John, just of clarifying that that particular point. In what ways was he rejected by his family?
I just grabbed my... I think I got a bit of paper that I wote the reference down on. I don't know where it's gone. The one that I was talking about was his brothers kind of taking the mickey out of him, really. They didn't buy into the fact that he was anyone special. One of the books in the New Testament, James, one of Jesus, you know, probably written by one of Jesus' brothers, James, who kind of, after Jesus raised from the dead, James went, you've come back to life. Maybe you were the Messiah. And he wrote a book, and it got in the Bible. So he's rejecting that way. I was looking, maybe someone else can help me out with this. I was looking for a bit where I was sure that at some point, and I thought it was the cliff episode where the guys wanted to chuck him off the cliff. I'm sure his family were hanging out there with him. But I couldn't find the reference. I didn't want to chuck it in there and make stuff up about the Bible that I wasn't convinced was there. But it, kind of in those ways, they just didn't get him. Even when he was a kid, actually, they went on a big Jewish festival, and Jesus stayed there as a kid to talk to all the rabbis about the Old Testament scriptures. And his parents said, "What are you doing?" He said, "I'm talking about the Bible, you know, about my father." And they didn't get that then. Although Mary was kind of onto something strange going on, but yeah, I guess those ways.
Whoever asked that question, if you want to read Mark chapter 3, you'll find a particular point where Jesus' mother and his brothers actually thought he was mad and was insane and came to take him home. So it might be a particular area that you want to look at as well. Two questions here. They're asked separately, but they are related to each other. If God does not like the idea of religion, why is the religion Christianity alive? If Jesus didn't like religion, then what is Christianity? So two kind of like questions there. What if Jesus doesn't like religion, what is Christianity? The next question assumes that Christianity is a religion. Why is it still alive if Jesus didn't like it? Let's come to you, Bimbala, first on that. Is that right?
Yes. I guess what maybe John's trying to get at is the idea of ritual and doing things as opposed to a relationship with a living God. So it's the idea that it's not about what we do in terms of how many times we go to church or how long we spend in church or what activities we do or what we might wear when we're there, but it's more about our day-to-day lives. And that's what Jesus is about. And the things that he was angry was that people turned it into a bunch of rules.
Yes, I think very much rules. Jesus didn't want us to be tethered down by rules. He wanted us to be freed up by a real faith in him. And I think if Christianity is about rules, like, you know, we go to church on Sunday, like we have a roast for Sunday lunch because that's what we do, then we're missing the whole point about Jesus, who came to give us something that's very new and very fresh.
Yeah, I guess the thing I find helpful, or the way I find it helpful to think about it, is religion is often, or can be sort of summed up in what you do to get to God. So I perform these acts and I get to God. Whereas the Bible, Jesus and Christianity, is about what God has done to get to us, which is kind of the inverse. The problem, I think, with religion is that you either end up down two roads. You end up down the road of being really self-righteous, like, yeah, I get to God, you don't, you suck, I do because I did this stuff. Or you end up with, oh, I just can't get to God, I'm just not good enough. And those, you know, neither of those teams win. The Bible's about God pursuing us and getting to us in the person of Jesus, and not us doing stuff to get to him.
Next question, so quite a simple one really, straightforward. Why is it important that Jesus is like me? Why is it important that Jesus is like me? Paul, let's come to you first on that.
Is that why is it important that Jesus is like Tim Davis? Is that
when you? That
person
there.
Yeah, right. I think Jesus, if he hadn't been human and didn't know what we tangled with, he wouldn't know how difficult it is for us to get it right in our own strength. I think I just find it very refreshing that however hard I try, there's no possibility of me managing to lead anything like a good or a perfect life. And that's why Jesus understands me. Jesus has died to change me because I couldn't do it myself.
I find it quite exciting and incredible that Jesus was a real person. And it's nice to know that that he was a tangible being and that he understands what we go through, and that and I think that helps with the relational aspect of it, because you see him in real situations, you see him reacting to people and responding to people, and I find it just personally helpful in my faith to know that he's real and that he moved and walked and ate and drank and had mates and had fun and
similar stuff really, isn't. So I got two people's answers to think about it, and that's good. I don't think it is important. I just think it's really kind. I think it's kind of empathy. Like, what kind of friends do you want? You want ones that put a bit of time into understanding you, don't you? So I don't know that it is important. It's just really nice, maybe.
Okay, complete contrast there to sort of flipping things right round with his next question. If Jesus is just like us, how can he help us? After all, we're messed up. So perhaps the title of the evening's all wrong, maybe. That's my own addition to that question. Is it wrong? If Jesus is just like us, then how can he help us? After all, we're all messed up. Avimbla.
This is not a very difficult question to answer at all. Not. It's that very complex idea that Jesus is fully like human, so he can relate to us, but he's also fully God, which is how he can help us. He led a perfect life, and that's how he could be a sacrifice for us. So he is like us, yes, but he can help us because he's also God, and that's kind of the point of him coming.
Yeah, I think the same thing. I mean, I was given 10 minutes, and I went through it. Whoever asked that question, I'm totally with you, because I was there going, yeah, Jesus is like us, and yet he's not like us. It's really just what Vimla was saying, really, in that Jesus is like us, and he's not like us. So he's like us. What the Bible says, I think it's Hebrews somewhere, shaky reference. Jesus was in every way like us, and tempted to do the bad stuff that we attempt to do and do, yet without sin. Sin being not like a religious word for bad stuff that you do or stuff that you shouldn't eat, depending on what diet you're on, but sin being just living not with God in control, not with God in charge. The big picture of the Bible is we do what we want to do, not what God wants to do, because we don't allow his ownership of our lives. But Jesus came and lived a life where he did exactly what God wanted to do, and he allowed God's total ownership of his life. Hence in the Garden of Gethsemane, where he didn't want to go to the cross, if that was me, I'd be like, I'm not going, see you later, I'm off. Jesus does go, because he defers to God, and he says, no, actually, I'm going to do it your way, not my way. So, yeah, he's like us, and no, he's not like us. Which is why he dies in our place, because he's like us, but also because he's not like us. He's on the cross there for all the things we do wrong, for all the running away from God that we do, for all that I'm in charge. I'll spend my salary how I spend my salary. I'll live my life how I live my life. That's what Jesus is on the cross for, because God's really angry at that, because we're his. These are the claims of the Bible. And we get his perfection in trade. We get his life that followed God to perfection the whole time. That's kind of the trade-off. That's what's happening in the gospel. That's what's happening in the Bible. We love it.
I think all I would add to that is that every human being from Adam and Eve through to us here have messed up, but Jesus did not mess up. And if Jesus was perfect and he was willing to die so that we could be saved by him.
There's another question here, which is how is Jesus unlike us? And I'm not going to come back to the guys on that because that's kind of already, in a sense, been answered. But this question is a particular way that Jesus is unlike, say, probably half the people in the room, in the sense that he is male, and I guess half the room here are female. So the question is this: God the Father and God the Son, both male figures. How can I, as a woman, really feel that God understands my life, all female experience? How can I identify with Jesus? So God the Father, Abimba, I'm coming to you first. Yeah, you can read it that way. I'm coming to you first. I'm going to give you time. And I'm going to read the question again. God the Father, God the Son, both male figures. How can I, as a woman, really feel that God understands my life, all female experience? How can I identify with Jesus? Abimba, you could have asked that question yourself as a woman. Answer it as a woman.
That's very tricky. So my thoughts might come out a bit rambly. The first thing that I thought of was that the way that my relationship with God works, I don't know how different it would be if I were a man. The things that Jesus sorts everything out, but he sorts out the fundamental things. And I know that men and women are different, but I think in our salvation we're pretty much the same. And so I think Jesus can relate to that even though he's a man. And I think that God the Father can relate to that even though he's a man. I've got male friends and I get on really well with my dad. And like, I'm able to have a relationship with them even though they're men. The nitty-gritty of being a girl, I think Jesus is there for too. And I think he shows that in terms of, for me, like compassion, being loving, being honest, someone to relate to. All of those characteristics are shown in Jesus. All of those characteristics are shown in God. So I feel like adequately provided for as a woman.
I think maybe I felt exactly the same way about my wife before I married her. I thought, you're a woman, you can't possibly understand me, so I'm not married, I don't have three kids or enjoy a great sex life. I don't know. Yeah, there's that, isn't there? It's just, we have relationships with men and women and we understand and get each other on some level, right? But also, I suppose, there's Jesus can be like a brother. If you know, he's like us, he's God's son, we're God's children, that kind of brother thing. And God is Father, and we have a father. But I guess the most important thing asking that question is, how can I relate to him? Well, how's it going? How are your efforts? Just have a pop. See how understanding he is. Open a Bible, read it, talk to him like he's there, even though you can't see him in a room, and see how you get on. Don't stress it. Just give it a whirl.
I think Jesus understands how women feel because women always tell men how they feel all the time. So. But the serious other side of that is that we think the women in my life tell me about my deficiencies, about not understanding and not listening and not getting the point of whatever. Jesus never had any of those deficiencies. You know, if you like, Jesus had a feminine side and he could achieve in amazing ways all those things that us men never quite manage to.
Abimba, anything you want to come back to? Do you want any further comments you want to make?
I don't feel like... Oh, I'm the big mouth anyway. I don't feel like a second-class citizen because I'm a woman. I think God is really clear that he's for everybody. And so I don't feel like I'm a woman, so I can't be as close to God as a man. I don't think there's any room for that in the Gospels, actually.
It's underlined, isn't it? Genesis 1, God made them male and female in his image, together in his image. He's the creator, and how can the created one not understand those he's created? So there's another level, I suppose, of further discussion as well. Next question. How can, by the way, with all of these questions, if you've got follow-on ones, then grab one of these three at the end and have a conversation with them. Paul Robinson, one of our associate ministers, is just there. Talk to him. Crofty's just there. Louise Viner, she sat over there. She was on the panel last night. So engage with some of these other folks around and don't leave if you've still got things in your mind and your heart you want to follow up on. How can one overcome the feeling of being lonely? Is it possible to never feel lonely ever? And this is the first question with a thank you and a smiley face on the end. So I like this person I hope they're never lonely. How can one overcome the feeling of being lonely? Is it possible to never feel lonely ever? John, let's come to you.
Say them again, because there was two and I have a very small brain.
How can one overcome the feeling of being lonely? Is it possible to never feel lonely?
I don't know that you can, and it's probably not. No, I don't know. I think... You really want to come back tomorrow, I think, here, because tomorrow is about God, the Holy Spirit, and the sort of tagline title is "With You," which will go somewhere to answer that in the context of why we're sitting here plugging Christianity. In terms of an answer from the Bible, then that'd be really good to do. But I think, yeah, I don't know. I'm going to pass it on for more wisdom.
I think it's very easy for people to be very lonely when they're surrounded by stacks of people. So it's not just having other people there. I was doing a drug clinic this afternoon with a waiting room packed with lonely people. And I think it's people where there isn't a real deep connection. You know, you can have superficial banter, but not relationship, not real understanding, nothing that kind of grows you. And I think that's something that Jesus offers, and it's trite to say, oh, just meet Jesus and you're never lonely anymore, but Jesus can give a depth to our understanding and can make us more complete people in ways that other friends can't. I don't know if that helps.
I think when I feel lonely, just knowing that Jesus cares for my every need, that helps me to not feel lonely in that way. I don't know, as like from a Christian perspective, because that's how I am with my friends. If I feel lonely, if I talk to them, even though they're not here, like just knowing that they care for me, that really helps with my loneliness. And I think the same thing in Christ, that you know that he's for you and that he loves you, and that helps with loneliness. I don't know if it's possible to not feel lonely even as a Christian.
Thank you all. A final question there. This question actually came in last night, but I've left it over to today because it fits with tonight's subject. Is it possible to have a personal relationship with Jesus? You three have. That's one of the reasons why you're here. So tell us just briefly from your own experience how you came to have a personal relationship with Jesus. 1 minute each. Paul first, then Miller second, John last.
Thank you. I think I've just been excited by meeting Jesus in very special ways at different times in my life, even from when I was 11 or 12, but times when I have seriously hit the buffers and felt I was really out of my own power base and my own skills, and Jesus came alongside in very special ways to lead me and to kind of care for me in ways that human beings have never done. So, yes, we can argue till the cows come home about creation, evolution, all sorts of theology, but in my book it's not about theology, it's about meeting a real person who changes me.
That's a really cool testimony. I kind of come from the religious background of this is how we do things, this is how we dress, this is how we light candles, this is how, yeah. And I was just really excited to read the Bible and meet a person who wanted to get to know me and wanted to love me and wanted to show me freedom. And that's how I came to follow Christ. And that's pretty much it.
Yeah, there's no. I don't know if there'll ever be a point in my life where it's not weird to talk about knowing the guy that I don't see anywhere. It's weird. I mentioned earlier, so God speaks through his book, the Bible, right? And that's it. And what's important to do is to take that on trust and to go, okay, God, you know, be familiar. He understands you. Okay, God, this is your book, so those guys at Costa said. And I'm going to read it like it is, even though I think I'm a bit crazy. If you're there, come on out and read the Bible, talk, read it, talk, read it, talk. And you meet God and you meet Jesus. And that, I mean, as far as I'm concerned, that makes me and all you other people who are Christians on the panel and elsewhere, it makes us slightly mad, slightly nuts, but it's true. So what are you going to do, you know? That's how I am. I was brought up a weirdo Christian, even more weird than I am now. And what I did was I sat down, I kind of sacked it all off, and I just sat down with the Bible and I opened it. I went, come on then, where are you? And I read it. And I said, okay, if this is the Bible, I'm going to treat it like the Bible. Okay, God, where are you? And I read it, and hi, God, right? And now I know him. And I'll say, I know Jesus. He comes with me everywhere. I talk to him all the time. I love him to bits. And I'm doing strange things in my life that I really don't want to do because of Jesus. So section me, or keep searching and find out more about this God, man, Jesus.
Thank you all very much indeed.